Right, okay. So we have two elections coming up in the next wee while. They are the local and European elections. And there's a lot going on here. There's a lot to talk about, a lot to clear up, I think. We are joined on the programme now by Paul McGill, who is the Area Manager in Housing and Corporate Donegal County Council and returning officer for the local elections. So a quiet month ahead for you, Paul, no doubt.
Morning, Greg.
Good to have you with us. Right, so first and foremost, how do we make sure that we can vote?
Well, very simply, from the point of view of anyone who's in doubt in relation to them being registered to vote, is going to check the register.ie. There's been a transition in the last 18 months, 2 years, to what is now a national system of registration. That said, it's still Donegal County Council or each local authority that looks after the registration of the citizens that reside in the particular counties. But from the point of view of anyone registering for the first time or someone wanting to check their details that they're qualified and on the register to vote, it's as simple as going to check the register.ie.
Is there a way to do that without being online, Paul? Just conscious that some people listening may not be, you know, IT savvy or literate for that matter, and may want to just ensure they have their vote too.
There is. Our general number of 074-915-3900 in the County Council, and people asking to get through to our franchise section, that's another way of checking, are you on the register? Or even from the point of view of sending us an email at franchise@donegalcoco.ie. But Greg, I suppose, again, as you said, for not everyone that is totally up to speed that way, yes, a phone call to our office can probably very properly check that someone's on the register.
And ideally, if you can do it online, and maybe reserve that for those that need a little bit of help, because, of course, like everywhere, staff are under pressure. Right, OK. Now, in terms of nominations, I said the 20th earlier, but it's actually the 13th. It's still relatively late in the day. So in terms of when we will know who is contesting the elections in what areas, what's the time frame there, Paul?
Well, the time frame there is that... And I suppose, Greg, if I preface this by saying is that when we talk about polling on the 7th of June, the nature of local elections is that it's very date or time specific per the act of working back from that. In simple terms, the last time for someone to be a candidate or have their nomination approved is 12 noon on Saturday, the 18th of May. Now, a slight aside to that is that anyone who's been nominated as a candidate, they have until 12 noon on the following Monday, which is the 20th, if they wanted to withdraw a nomination. So in simple terms, Greg, it's just after 12 o'clock on Monday that we know who the full list of candidates are for each of the electoral areas.
Right. And listen, lots of people may or may not have, not here or anywhere, may have says, right, I'm going for it. I'm going to stand in the local elections. But until we get that definitive list on that day, we don't know the runners and riders until that point, because someone could declare or change their mind. People have a lot going on in their lives, but we'll know definitively who's contesting in what areas come the 20th of this month.
Correct.
Okay.
Absolutely.
For prospective candidates, how do you become, and I'm sure most of them have their head around this now at this stage, but out of interest, Paul, how do you become a candidate? Or what's the criteria, if any?
I suppose if many people would have saw the various newspaper ads that we placed, but I suppose as a further help to both prospective candidates and even people who have questions in relation to the Register of Electors, We've developed a portal, donegalelections.ie. And that's simply the one landing page for both. And equally, there's adequate or extensive information there from the point of view if you want to become a candidate or if you're checking whether you're registered to vote. Now, what I would say is that, I suppose, two elements of that for anyone who's looking to be a candidate. It's very time-specific in relation to receiving nominations. Because basically from Monday the 13th until the Saturday, which is the 18th, at 12 noon, that's the very specific period for me to receive nominations here in Lifford. As well as that, the required forum, and it's not onerous by any means, but there is a required form there which is on that particular portal to download. And as well as that, there's a few pages of accompanying information as well. So other than candidates having the required form filled out and having photographs or maybe a party affiliation, if I can just comment generally, it's not an onerous process from the point of view of, shall I say, getting their stuff together or being good to go and basically coming in and arranging appointments with myself during that particular week.
People have to physically hand over the papers. Obviously, the portal is there for downloading documents and for information. But still at this day and age, and why not, you physically have to have these papers handed to you by 12 noon on Saturday, May 18th. And there's no wiggle room in relation to that. You say they're not onerous, but they have to be filled out correctly and handed in before that time.
Well, the law provides that even though in the era that we're in, is that those physical papers have to be handed over. Now, at the same time, I suppose the advantage with that, in a way, is that it is a very specific week. And before either a proposer or a candidate is leaving my office in Lifford on that particular day, I'm advising them that their paperwork's in order, that their forms come properly filled in, and they know then at that point in time that they have all the required information that gets them on the ballot paper.
Is there any capacity for a postal vote? A listener says they're away abroad on holidays that day, lovely for them, but they still want to be able to vote.
Put simply, for someone on holidays, no. As regards the option of a postal vote, there are a couple. Well, the first thing I would say is that the 11th of May, in relation to this electoral event in June, the 11th of May is the deadline for people registering for a postal vote. In general, there are two qualifying areas, one being a student who's away from home on that particular day, or someone who, from a work nature or the nature of the work, they're away from home. They can qualify to vote. At the same time, there's also a qualification from the point of view of illness or people with disabilities.
And presumably people in nursing homes and what have you.
Yes, right. They're provided for as regards an option to vote, people in nursing homes. But even people who are maybe confined to their own home from the point of view of mobility, mm-hmm, or illness, they also have an option.
And off the top of your head, it's kind of a complex question. Is there a particular reason why holidays are exempt? Is it just a quirk of the legislation?
Well, I suppose, Greg, without the simple reality is that from people away on holidays, there's no provision in the current legislation, even from the 92 or Electoral Act, to provide for that. And I suppose if I can say to you, Paul, that's just the way it is. There isn't a provision.
Yeah, no, that's got that. Sometimes the obvious answer is the simplest and most accurate. Has much work been done over the intervening 5 years to sort of tidy up the register of electors? You know, there's always going to be reports of people getting polling cards to the wrong address, multiple polling cards, that type of stuff. Or is it up to the electorate to make sure their details are correct and accurate, I wonder, Paul?
Well, Greg, as you say, prior to the referenda in March, it was 4 years previously from the last electoral event that we had in the country. I think it was the general election in February 2020. Now, work is ongoing in relation to the register of electors. We are in a transition nationally of moving on to a new system where people are inputting their PPS number, they're inputting their air code, they're inputting dates of birth. If I can say is that there's no doubt that even nationally there were shortcomings, significant shortcomings in the process of registering up to that time, because people didn't need a PPS number and they didn't need a date of birth. And I suppose if you're looking to keep the register accurate, where you're simply dealing with a name and address, and particularly in the county that we're in, you can't take it for granted that the name that you might see is the same person that's on the register.
And you know too, Paul, to some extent, and this is absolutely nothing, not an indictment of current postal workers, not for a second, they do great work. But the country's kind of changed, I think, to when the system was first established, in that your post person knew everyone, or it was, do you know what I mean? I think now there's, as I say, it's no, I don't even want you to comment on that, Paul, but it's just things have changed a little bit. People have retired, new people have come in, and I think there's a little bit of reliance on that sort of real local long-term knowledge in this to get the right ballot to the right person.
Well, Greg, if I can say it, you're absolutely right. I mean, like, how our country has changed, that does maybe 15, 20 years ago, the postman basically knew everyone that was in the locality. That has changed. But that said, I suppose the advice that I'm giving to people is that, okay, if you got a polling card, particularly for the last event, which was in March, then generally speaking, you know you're good to go again as regards the event in June. But again, if people have any queries or questions about that, it's a matter of going in to check the register, inputting their details, and to check to see if they're there.
Which I did as well. If they're not there, what happens? What do you do? Or if the information is incorrect, or if you've moved, a lot of people maybe have moved address, moved townlands and what have you. You know, we do move around a bit, depending on if you're in the rental market sector, or you just might have changed where you're likely to vote. Can that be changed on check the register as well?
That can, and I suppose, Greg, what you're simply doing there is that if someone has moved from an area, what they're doing there, or the advice is that they simply go on to check the register, search as regards their previous address, and basically input what is an update to their change of address or whatever. Because I know that, you know, it is an issue that we deal with from the point of view of the register, of people saying, well, I only moved to this location, or I moved to that location. And I suppose it's not something that we readily know. And what we're simply advising people to, if there's any change, circumstance or otherwise, simply go on to check the register and apply to update your details.
Now, if you do that and the address is correct and all that type of stuff, right, but it just so happens, and it can happen for whatever reason, that you don't actually receive your polling card, and we're fast forwarding to polling day now here, really, and we'll clarify this closer to the time, I'm sure, because there'll be questions. Can you still vote if for some reason or other your polling card doesn't come through to you?
Well, you can, provided you're on the register of electors.
Yeah.
And Greg, I think it's important to emphasise this. Just because you didn't get a polling card doesn't disqualify you from voting. But that said, if you go to your local polling station, to put it simply, when the presiding officer or the poll clerk is checking your details, you must be on the register of electors to entitle you to vote in that electoral event.
Now, obviously, since the last local elections, the population has grown by, you know, I think in excess of 10,000. Not all of those are Irish citizens, but they do have an entitlement to vote. Are you, your office, charged with making them aware that they have a vote? Or is that up to the candidates or up to them sourcing that information themselves?
Well, Greg, nationally, I would say in the last 6 months, what we would have done is that, in tandem with some of the Department of the Environment publicity around the local elections. And as you know, there's that we have a lot of people that have come to our country in the last couple of years. We have also, as a local authority, tried to publicise that. We've sent out flyers to various households and that. And as you know, that in the case of the local elections, you know, it's a broad range, almost everyone residing in our country and who has a PPS number can vote in the local elections. That's a little bit different from the European, but almost everyone can vote in the local elections. And what would be simply advising people to do there, or visitors or people have come to the country, simply go on to the portal and register their details there.
And just from either a local or national perspective, you know, say, for instance, in areas where there is grouped accommodation, were flyers dropped in there or notifications put in there, or was it hoped that the residents would pick up this information, you know, through the media more generally?
Well, earlier in the year, and I think it was around late January, what we had done is that we had sent a flyer to absolutely every household in the country.
Okay.
In tandem with the department, as I say, we're running a number of other initiatives from the point of view of the awareness. And it is important. I think it is important that people are registered to vote and exercise their right at any election event.
A caller says, I live in Carndonagh. Can I vote in North Inishowen and South Inishowen as it's the Inishowen Municipal District, or do I just get one vote? I could probably get this answer that one, but...
Obviously, you simply get one vote. And it all depends on which specific electoral area that you're residing in. But in that particular instance there, if they're residing in North Inishowen, then I would have thought it's the Carndonagh electoral area, one vote only per person.
Yeah, and of course, you know, dependent where you are, there's different, there's different, obviously, electoral areas, there's joined electoral areas, and then there's border areas where people might not be 100% sure, etc. Obviously, you know, that ourselves and the rest of the media will do their bit and get that information out. But the council also, too, has a portal, and I presume it can't be fully updated until after the 20th of May, which will show the electoral areas, the more of the details as to we've been discussing how people can vote, but also, you know, which candidates are where.
Absolutely. And when you talk there about where people might vote, part of the element of the portal is even is that from the point of view of voter information, if you're on the register of electors, obviously that's your first port of call. You can also go onto the portal there and simply key in your air code. And that should bring you up the information as basically where your local polling station is and the air code that's associated with that local polling station. But again, Greg, that is information at a particular point in time.
Yeah, we're not
obviously
there yet.
That's not going to capture people who have updated. But that said, you know, it's still important that people continue. Mm. You know, we still have the deadline of the 20th of May for what we call the ordinary voter in this electoral event. And it's important that if people are not already registered, that they do that prior to that date.
What age, there's a couple of questions about young ones in the household turning 18. So at what age would you be able to vote turning 18 ahead of the elections? Not what age, at what point, if you know what I mean? There's bound to be a cutoff. Like, so if my birthday was on a certain date, I can register. But if after that and before the elections, I wouldn't. It's a narrow enough window, presumably.
It's a narrow enough window, but... there is an element now, even in the new register, which allows a pre-registration for 16 and 17-year-olds. Now, again, where they're putting in their date of birth and all that, if I can say that there's basically a timer associated with that, and if they are 18 years of age or older on the 7th of June, then the likelihood is they can vote at the local elections on the 7th.
Another caller says there's issues with people voting if they've got letters after their name. I haven't come across that one before.
Well, the reason for, and I think what the voter's referring to there is that there are different qualifying criteria from the point of view of you voting at different electoral events. And if I can use a brief example, generally speaking, on the forthcoming local elections, ordinarily resident in Ireland, you've got a PPS number. Generally speaking, you're qualified to vote. Now, if I can give an example, which is very, very relevant from the point of view of where we are today, is that, for example, if you're a Ukrainian citizen, the likelihood is you can vote in the local elections. You can't vote in the European elections because you're not an EU citizen. Part of that, from a letter's point of view, is to denote or assist from the point of view of that person going to a polling station. A poll clerk or a presiding officer there might be saying to that individual, look, I can give you a ballot paper for the local elections, but you're not entitled to vote.
I get you, right.
European. Yeah.
So they're letters that are allocated. It's not like Greg G. Hughes. Right, I get you. I understand.
No.
Okay. Yeah, so this is to make sure that they're given both. Okay, I get you. Right, okay. Is there somebody that I can ring in confidence to discuss people voting who shouldn't be voting? I don't know what that's in reference to, but I'm ring the council, ask for franchise.
If someone wants to bring something like that to your attention, then the bottom line is that, again, you're ringing the general council number. You're being asked to put through to the franchise section. And from the point of view of that something that someone wants to report or wants to bring to your attention, then the bottom line is, and they want that treated or to be dealt with in confidence, then we have a duty to do that. So from that point of view, if someone has an information or whatever, then certainly they should be making contact with us.
Right. So if you're a voter, check the register as soon as possible. Make sure everything's accurate for you there. If you're going to stand in the election, make sure you get all of the relevant information in by the 12th, by 12 noon on Saturday, May 18th. We'll know definitively then in the early days of the following week who's running, where they're running. And Paul, listen, thanks for that. I think we've got a lot of information out there. We'll chat again. Good luck for the next few weeks. Of course, the likes of us and others have to work closely and want to, of course, with you and your team. And we look forward to that to bring the best information we can to the public. So, Paul, lovely to have you on. Thank you very much indeed. And thanks for fielding all of those questions. It's greatly appreciated.
Thank you, Greg.
Bye-bye, thanks. Paul. That's bye-bye. Paul McGill, Area Manager in Housing and Corporate Donegal County Council and Returning Officer for the local elections. Now, we're going to keep you up to date with absolutely everything in the run-up to and on the day of the election. Obviously, you know, things are being finalised, but just to let you know what you can look forward to here on Highland Radio. We will be hosting a series of debates where you invite every candidate that will be contesting the local elections to join in these debates. They'll be run over a number of days, as you can imagine. There's an awful lot of candidates expected to be running, which means we have to give over a certain amount of our programming, which is fine. You know, the local elections are of great interest. So we will be drawing names and building the panels from there. So hopefully, dependent on whether or not they accept the invite, you'll hear from every single candidate. We'll have roundtable debates. You'll be able to listen to them and watch those later in this month. Also, we will be inviting all of the European candidates to election debates. They will be done slightly differently as plans are right now. They'll be broadcast directly after we come on air, online, on your smart speaker, on our website, and also for you to watch on our social media when it suits you as well. But they'll be recorded, they'll be broadcast live. So we have a series of debates for the local elections. There is a problem with time here in getting all of the candidates on in terms of time and what have you. But we will be accommodating all of them as much as is. Well, not we will be accommodating all of them, but hopefully they'll be able to. But I'll tell you more about that in advance. And then on the day of the election, we'll have our coverage, of course, the moratorium there. On Saturday, votes will be taken to the Oire Leisure Centre to be separated. We might get an idea of what's going on both locally and from a European level. We'll be broadcasting that day, of course. And then on Sunday, we've got teams in every centre right across the county bringing you the very latest as it happens. So if you like your elections, this is our All Ireland now, right? This is our All Ireland coming up. If you like elections, we have you covered on every base here on Highland Radio. Okay, we'll be in the garden with Paul in the not-too-distant future. First, we say good morning to Independent County Councillor Frank McBurty. Good morning, Frank.
Good morning, Greg, and good morning to your listeners.
Right, I suppose, Frank, before we get to the upcoming meeting, your decision to throw your hat in the ring again, was it an easy decision for you, a tough decision?
No, I would say it was a tough decision, but my family and I decided that it was the right thing to do, that the people of the Lyfordster Northern Municipal District deserve to have an independent voice. And I am that independent voice, and I'm not frightened to raise the issues that people come to me about on a daily basis. Like, I'm very lucky that I have my own office at my own home, and I can get people coming to me at all hours, and the door's always open to them.
Right, okay. Now, coming up, you have teamed up. I think you've been quite publicly critical of the approach in trying to get justice for those affected by defective concrete, and you and your family are pursuing your own avenues in that regard. And if I've misframed that, let me know, Frank. But you're also coming together, or it's connected, with 15, as a family yourself who's affected by defective concrete, you're also coming together with 15 others affected by defective concrete. What is the pathway, and more will be revealed, of course, in the upcoming meeting, but what is the pathway that you're exploring to try and get a justice, as you would see it and the others would see it, for affected homeowners?
Well, as you know, I've always advocated the legal route, and that legal route, I believe, is best served by judicial review. It's the quickest way to highlight the fact that IS 465, which is the guidance protocol that must be used by all homeowners in Donegal and in Ireland in general, we're restricted to mica only. And I think people have agreed now at this stage that mica is not the cause of the structural defects. So we are at an advanced stage. Back in October, we met as a group of 14. That has grown, and I expect it to grow even further. And we've decided now is the right time to hold the public meeting to discuss what we have actually done in preparing this judicial review and what stage it's at. Mm. And we're going to share that on the night at the public meeting in Rafo. It's a fantastic little venue. It's a new hall in Rafo, the Volt House. And I think that it's a good place to start, being able to advise people what we're actually trying to achieve. And the word justice that you use there, that's what we are trying to achieve. We're not trying to achieve anything else. We only want justice for something we didn't cause, and we deserve that justice. And what we have been delivered is the worst form of justice, is pretend justice. And that's what this enhanced scheme is. The 90-10 scheme took us a year to discover how the failings in it. And it's all designed around mica as the cause of the structural defects. And I'm only a layperson, but I've investigated this for 3 years. I have expert engineers working for me. I have expert geologists and petrol lab working for me, and it's the expert witnesses that we'll be using in affidavits in this judicial review going forward.
Can you explain
now, our solicitors, Gallagher Brennan Ponsonby's, are our firm of solicitors, and we have engaged now barristers to deal with going forward and trying to take this judicial review in the public interest. Now, we've exhausted all avenues, myself and 16 other homeowners. We have tried to engage with TDs. We have tried to engage with TDs all over Ireland, but they just don't want to talk about the possibility of us taking a judicial review to highlight the fact that we feel that the Irish government is not adhering to the EU directives, which are actually adopted by the National Standards Authority of Ireland. We should be using those EU directives to test our homes, but we're being forced to test our homes with the IS 465 protocol, which we will try and prove in the courts is flawed.
Mm-hmm. Now, how does this vary from other campaigns that are ongoing, in that, you know, there's thousands upon thousands of people affected by this, and they might not be able to track what the likes of MAG are doing. They might feel that what you're doing is over their head. So, you know, there's lots of people out there listening that aren't engaged in any campaigns. They're just looking for a solution that they can get their house fixed, and they don't have the money, and they just want it to be fair. But say you have other groups as well who are saying, look, that these regulations don't go far enough. The rising walls are also affected. The foundations are affected. That the only way to resolve this is for complete demolition, for foundations to be replaced, and that all of those costs should be met by the state, because this is no family's fault, regardless of whether they think Frank McBurty's going the right direction or someone else is going the direction. Like, fundamentally, Frank, are we not all, and when I say we, I don't mean me, but are we all not all on the same page here, that we all believe that there are materials in concrete, be it rising walls, internal, external, and founds, that the government needs to take account of and put in place a scheme that many would see would address all of these issues? Where are you different to what I've just outlined, if that makes sense?
Well, first of all, everyone wants their home fixed, and everyone wants their properties fixed. And the reality is that I don't have a problem with that. But, I mean, some people are going to enter the enhanced scheme because they don't see any other way of getting their home fixed. And that's okay with me. And it's okay with the people that's involved with us. Like, we have a number of the homeowners that are involved with us who have actually entered the scheme. But I'll give you an example. I'm making representations politically for a number of homeowners who have had their engineers' recommendations downgraded by the housing agency in this new enhanced scheme. Now, you have to go back to the science. And this all came to a head on the 17th of November and the 27th of November 2021 when my parents' and my cousins' homes came in with their sulfate attack analysis, which nobody knew about actually doing until we commissioned those sulfate attack analysis ourselves, which have identified internal sulfate attack in the blocks, not caused by mica. Now, we move one step further than that, and in July 2022, I commissioned the testing of my father's foundations and my mum's foundations. And any time Corin and our chartered engineer, Kieran Coyle, came into the equation and we took the core samples from the foundations. Now, a foundation has to be 35 newtons and above. It's a different standard to the concrete block. Now, we then commissioned Petrolab to test those 8 core samples, and what came back was the external sulfate attack and an internal sulfate attack. But because of the external sulfate attack, we had to commission another company in Northern Ireland called Causeway Geotech, mm-hmm. who had to come and do what's called a geotechnical examination so that it could rule out any contamination of the ground that was causing the external sulfate attack. Now, yeah. Thank God those tests, 5 boreholes around the home, came back negative. So Petrolab, in conjunction with our chartered engineer, a very qualified chartered engineer who's also registered as IS465 competent, was able to identify that the aggregates used in my father's foundations were causing the external mm-hmm. and internal sulfate attack, predominantly by pyrrhotite and other sulfates identified as total sulfates yeah. in the test
but
results.
Back to my
now,
point, Frank. Do
we ask why we're taking the judicial yeah. review.
Okay, and I want to talk specifically about the judicial review, but again, this is just to try and make sure everyone feels included and understands this. At this point, though, is everyone not waiting on IS 465 to be updated? Like, everyone's on the same page with the science now. And, you know, in fairness to you, Frank, I think you would say...
I don't agree with that, Greg. We've exposed this science with my father's and my cousin's test results. Now, okay. We have another cousin who also has those sulfate attack analysis on the blocks. Now, this scheme is for blocks only. It doesn't include foundations. Now, we have scientific evidence to prove that the foundations are also defective.
Yep.
My father's foundations have lost 75% of their Newton strength in less than 14 years.
Yeah, and listen, and we heard from the head of the council saying if it were he would be, even if the scheme's not expanded to include foundations, that even he would be of the mind that the foundations do need to be changed.
Well,
right.
You have to understand that the scheme is designed around IS 465.
Oh, no, I get that, yeah.
And that scheme is designed around mica only. We're not allowed to test for anything else in the 9010 scheme, which is no longer there. And the enhanced scheme, we don't really know what the housing agency are actually going to test for.
Yeah,
but we know that they're using the flawed standard IS 465 to conduct this testing, which only allows us in Donegal to test for mica only.
So if I were to test...
black and white.
If you tested...
There needs to be... it's simple.
Okay.
It's simple.
So just
we need a public inquiry to answer all the questions.
Just so I understand then, right? So if you only tested your house, your father's house and your cousin's houses, if you only tested them under the IS 465 protocol as it stands now, you would not be able to apply for the scheme. Is that what you're saying, that that your houses would come back clear?
No. I'll give an example. The cousin's house came back with 8% mica, right?
Yeah.
But because the Newton strength was below 7.5 Newton, they would have qualified for option one on the recommendation made by the engineer. But my father bought a stronger block when he built his house. So his blocks came in at 8 Newton and 12 Newton, and the test results were 16% mica. But because of the reactive iron sulfate minerals that were identified in both sets of test results, it meant that my father's recommendation from his engineer was full demolition to the foundation, which now includes the foundations because the foundations have been properly tested under the mechanisms used by Petrolab.
Okay, I get you.
Now, right. You have to understand there's 2,000 Petrolab test results in Donegal to date. Every one of them are showing a visual estimate of reactive iron sulfate minerals. Now, over 800 of them entered the 90-10 scheme. Now, we're of the understanding that over 100 of those have actually conducted the sulfate attack analysis that we supplied to Donegal County Council in November 2021, which ended up suspending the scheme in December 2021 for further directions from the department. And I put that down solely to those two test results that, in my opinion, were the first two sulfate attack analyses conducted in the county.
Now, Frank, so just to be clear, right, at the end of the day, even if everything that you are saying is acted upon and all the boxes are ticked and they say, right, you were right, we accept we need to change IS465 along the lines of what you're saying, that doesn't mean the cap changes, though, right? So the cap is still going to be there. What does your judicial review do to sort of obviously accept that the IS465 needs changing, but what does it do to deliver 100% redress, especially for those people, you know, with larger houses that are way in excess of 420? There people would say there is equally entitled to 100% redress. So how does your judicial review raise that cap to ensure that even if you happened to be able to build a bigger house, that you actually get 100% redress?
Well, first of all, the first thing that should have been done on this was the correct engineering solution, which we don't have.
Yeah, but say we got
there,
Frank.
We should all be getting an option one.
Yeah, but say we got that. How does the judicial review increase the cap? Because even if you get everything that you're talking of, right, there still is that cap there. So they might say, right, we'll include founds. It's full demolition. Founds have to be changed. But as it stands, the cap's still at 420. So how will this, does this judicial review
well,
have
to... really a cap of 420. It's not really a cap of 420 because it's a cap of square footage. But the thing about it is, by the time you pay all the professional fees, you're not getting 420.
Yeah, I know. But I'm just trying about to use language everyone
understands. I'll tell you, in my opinion, how it changes. I think that if we won a judicial review, and even if we lose it, it opens the door to the EU Commission. And I feel that when that door opens to the EU Commission, like they did down in Moville in the sewage treatment plant, where the EU Commission stepped in against the state and forced them to implement the EU directives in, I feel that that is the same avenue that we're trying to go.
Yeah, but that took 20 or 30 years. Do you think this can be done more quickly?
No, it will not. A judicial review will only take months. And secondly, my father's High Court case, my parents' High Court case against the state we're taking, and a test case. See, what people don't understand, the litigation, which I do, because I've been involved in many litigations over the years, that litigation process is a test case, and if my parents won that test case,
sets a precedent.
That test case, or even if it's settled, that is sets a precedent for every homeowner in this country. But I feel that this will force the public inquiry that should have been established by now, and RTDs right across this country are being silent about the fact that they should be establishing a public inquiry. And RTDs, in my opinion, it would be safer for them to take the judicial review in the public interest.
Okay.
Because they have a better chance of getting their costs.
I hear you. Friday, May 31st of this year, it's in the Vault House, a new venue in Rafo. It starts at 7 p.m. I presume it's an open invitation. At the end of the day, ideally, everyone affected by this should be pulling in the one direction, even if it's different ropes that are being pulled. But it's an open public meeting Friday, May 31st in the Vault House Rafo. Starts at 7 p.m. And more details of what will be sort of discussed and unveiled at that will be announced closer to the time. But for now, Councillor, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. That's Independent Councillor Frank McBurty. Okay, so mainly cloudy but dry today with some sunny spells developing in the afternoon. Temperatures 14 to 17 degrees in light variable breezes. A little cooler near the coast, but wherever you are, when the sun comes out, it's going to feel much more pleasant, if you like the heat. And, as I say, over the course of this week and into the weekend, you're going to hear very familiar weather forecasts because that's the trend for the next wee while. Right, so that means we're going to take a step into the garden, metaphorically, and welcome for the first time this season Paul McLaughlin of Ballacdur Garden Centre in Letterkenny. Hiya, Paul.
Hi, Greg.
How are you getting on?
Not so bad.
How's the winter?
Winter's grand, very wet. Huh? Consider building an ark at one stage.
You haven't cut the hedge on the gym?
It's remarkably tidy up since last week, so it is.
And come here, we're all rushing now, are we, into our garden centres looking to plant our window boxes and stuff? Is it too early for that? Is it too late?
No, it's still early enough anyway. As Seamus Gunnow says, I'd put a caveat on it in the sense that... basically, you should be good to go now, as long as there's no frost in the near future. Older gardeners would have left it sort of towards the end of May into June. But
never cast a clout till May is out.
Exactly, a lot of people have first communions and stuff coming up, yeah. So they're anxious to get that. And the spring's been that prolonged, sort of the winter's been that prolonged. Everybody's just excited and ready to go.
I think we all want a little lift. You know, I mean, I hate to exclude anyone. I know for some people, you know, for whatever reason, they don't like the heat or they think it's a nightmare and whatever. But I think the majority of us, there's a little spring in the step, isn't there?
Absolutely.
When the weather's out. And if you're lucky enough to have some outdoor space or even a tiny little bit of space, throwing a bit of colour and a bit of nature into that, I think it gives us the lift that we need in this troubled world.
Absolutely. Really brightens up everybody's attitude, kind of the flowers coming out.
And you can make a big impact at the moment now. Maybe it's your first cut, maybe it's just tidying up, whatever. And now's a good time to be at that crack, even if you don't want to necessarily go planting yet.
Yeah, now's a perfect time. Just get outside. As you tidy, you'll see sort of areas that need work and areas that could be doing a brightening up, you know. But it's just for your own mind getting outside.
Yeah. In terms of our lawns, again, if you're lucky to have one, the temptation will be there. There'll be patches where it's really quite long, right? The temptation will be there to cut it down to the bare, if the first cut, get it over with. No one likes to do two cuts on the one piece of grass because it's like double the work.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any danger in that? What's the correct way to do your first cut?
Correct way to do the first cut is probably, if it is quite long, keep the blades high.
Yeah.
And that allows it. Like if you're collecting the grass, that allows the mower to actually lift it all rather than sort of leave half of it behind it.
And if there's any moss in there, and I think a lot of them too, you don't want to be getting the blade down into the moss.
Pretty much.
Hopefully, with the drier weather, a bit of sunlight, it'll start to die off. And we'll probably talk about treatments, but you don't want to be getting down into that moss either.
No, absolutely not, because it just clogs up everything and it just leaves it looking sort of very... very scalped for a while, if you know what I mean. So probably just start gently into it and keep the blades high if the grass is quite long, and maybe then get back sooner than you normally would by just going back, say, in a week's time or whatever, and taking it down a wee bit further each time.
In terms of looking at your beds, is there anything you should be doing with them at the moment?
General bed, given them a tidy, but if you haven't fertilised, put a general purpose fertiliser on, now's a good time to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of especially after rain. It's better to one of the grounds damp.
And you're still a chicken poo fan?
Absolutely.
Okay. Now, mulch. What is mulching and what's the advantage of doing that in your beds? And what mulch can we use?
Pretty much. Probably the most popular one would be bark mulch. It just is the bark of trees. What bark mulch does, it's an organic material, so it introduces more nutrients into the soil, and it also helps retain water. Sort of water gets trapped in under, so whenever you come into the summertime, it sort of maximises the use of your water that you put on your bed.
With the proviso about frost and hard frost and keeping an eye on that, right, there's always, I mean, the chances are slim. We're rolling the dice to some extent, but listen, let's be optimistic. You can batter on, can you, with your summer bedding, your baskets?
Yes, I'd be quietly confident you could batter on with them now. And the thing is, if you do see a forecast coming along that says it's going to be quite frosty for a night, like if it's pots that, if they're not too hard to move, you could even nearly move them into a sheltered spot.
Fruit trees. What's the story with them? What can you be doing them, or should you be doing them at this time of the year?
Fruit trees, just you should have already pruned them. It's kind of a little bit late to prune them at this stage, but general feed at this time of year would be perfect. And just what I call it, a general feed, even with the poultry manure that would do the trick.
Strawberries, is now a good time to be planting them?
Yeah, perfect time to be planting them.
And when would you be seeing the literal fruits of your labour?
Yes, fruits of your labour. Plant them now. If you have a fairly established plant, you would have fruit within a month.
Nice.
Definitely in June. Okay. And you should continue through the summer.
Right. Roses, they always come up too. What's the story with roses?
Roses, we general feed now if you haven't already done it. Pretty much from now on, the foliage will be coming out and the new buds will all be coming out. So keep a wee eye on the emerging stuff because it's that wee nice juicy bit that's actually prone to the green fly.
But what can you do about that?
Pretty much you have a few different options. There are sprays available. If you don't want to go down the road of the sprays, you can make up your own organic stuff with like the garlic spray. And that kind of crack, you know.
Sounds disgusting. But we're trying to put green flies off here,
yes,
not on
exactly.
neighbours.
So make it unappetizing.
So, like, it, depending on where you're in the county, this is a question. I think it depends on your growth, right? Because you'll see, what I've observed is far more growth in the south of the county than the north of the county. So I'm starting to see now lawns and stuff come up in the north. But in pockets of the south of the county, you know, the grass seemed to have come on much more sooner.
Yeah.
But is there a guide as to when one should cut the grass?
Generally people just look at it on the basis of an as you need to basis, if you know what I mean. Generally you'd be looking after sort of after the last danger of hard frost. So you'd be into around the start of April, around that generally would be a mark.
Would you be in favour of sometimes, you know, the grass doesn't grow much, but, you know, maybe your dandelions and stuff pop up to sort of leave them and sort of not view them as ugly things because nature kind of needs them? Or?
Yes, that's where me and my wife would differ. So I would tend to let them go a bit more.
Doctors differ, patients die.
Yes, pretty much. Right? Yeah. So you have the whole no-mow-may. That's still a thing, you know. So it's like now is a very important time for bees and pollinating insects coming out that they're sort of establishing their nests and all. So now is a good time for them to have the flowers available, like the dandelions and all.
And if you're out and about, out in the grass and what have you too, of course, May is Lyme Disease Awareness Month. And just keep a special eye out on yourself and wee ones out in our... For some reason, there's supposed to be signs put up. They never were put up in some of our national parks and what have you. But now is this month. If you're out and about and out through grass and shorts, what have you, please keep a close eye on any ticks or tick bites. And we'll be doing something on that later in the month. But just a reminder, if you're out and about, just to keep an eye on ticks. Right. Can I do anything to encourage an apple tree and a pear tree to bear fruit? Round of applause.
Yes, absolutely. Oh. That's a funny one. Normally the answer there would be put sulfate of potash on it. And this year, because of things going on in the world, it's in this part of the world, sulfate of potash generally comes out of Israel, so we've chosen not to stock it. So we have just... But the notion of that there would be check your supplier. Sometimes you can get it. Some of it comes from Canada. It's just where it naturally occurs. Or for a more general approach, your poultry manure would help bring on your tree. Apart from your poultry manure, if you actually get rose food would have a certain amount of potash naturally occurring in it. Mm-hmm. So the likes of that there would help bring on the fruit if your tree's healthy enough as it is. So rose food would do as an alternative.
I get you. Are there any plants that I could plant now that would grow nicely over the summer?
Plants grow now. Suppose you're spoiled for choice at the minute. So garden centres are pretty much full. They're coming down with plants. If you're looking for someone's going to come back every year, like some perennials there, you'll get a great show now for the summertime. They'll die back to basically nothing for the winter and come back up next year. Mm-hmm. For more spectacular look, probably chat about summer bedding, which is almost disposable. You plant it now, it goes on until Halloween or so if you're lucky. And then generally you'll be planting again in the spring.
Yeah, and the garden centres are full of advice as well at the moment.
Yes, you know? Absolutely.
That's you guys are like, you've been waiting for this. Tomatoes, do they need to be in a greenhouse to grow?
The short answer would be yes. If you're very lucky and had a covered area like a porch or something facing south, you would have enough shelter and you get the maximum sunshine. But generally north of Dublin, you'd be chatting inside.
Fruit trees, they're healthy, but they're producing hardly any fruit. Is there anything I can do to help them along?
Yeah, pretty much, like I say, because the potash isn't really an option at the minute, rose food would be the best bet. Okay. That's just to bring
Is it more expensive to do it with rose food than potash? Or
slightly more expensive, all right. Sort of a more organic approach would be, potash is generally a lot of potassium in it, so if you tend to eat a lot of bananas, just put the banana skins around your fruit trees. Actually help to bring it on.
I had a tree 14 years growing. What's causing it to die? 4 years ago, three more died the same.
Yes, unfortunately, it seems to be a bit of a trend. I think there's a picture attached to that there, as Caroline showed me out there. That's a Cypress Goldcrest, so it would be. unfortunately, it'd be very hard from a picture, very hard to diagnose a cause. Generally, someone like that there, because there are conifers like that, they've actually died a long time before you notice.
Yeah.
Because they retain the greenness for a while. So you sort of have to figure out what season it died in. Probably water is 99% the killer, so it would be either too little in the summer or too much in the winter.
Great to hear Paul back. I've just cultivated my soil over the weekend. What are the best and quickest veggies to set today?
Pretty much best and quickest. Once again, there are a full range available there at the minute. Quickest, any sort of salad crops like lettuce, scallions, that sort of stuff. Onions, perfect. And sort of any of the cabbage family would come on nicely. Or quickest, probably peas and beans would be very good. Peas especially are very popular.
Can I trim a cherry blossom tree, cut out the old branches, etc.?
Yes, now would be a good enough time to cut it all out. Obviously, at this time of year, if it's most cherry blossoms wouldn't actually be big enough to support a nest or someone, but very nesting birds, obviously keep an eye for them and leave it maybe.
Yeah.
But no, now that it's finished flowering, now would be a good enough time to cut it back a bit.
Is it good for the grass to leave the grass on the garden, and should you do it with every cut or every other cut? Now, if it were the old lawnmower I have, it's leaving massive amounts of grass, right? But then you get mulchers. I don't know if there's a difference. Is there a different answer depending on your mower?
Pretty much. Mulching mowers tend to chop the grass two or three times and leaves it sort of smaller. Some of it actually almost disintegrates.
And you won't see the white all over the place as it dries out.
Probably depends on the frequency of which you mow. And generally, probably every second cut would be plenty. Yeah. But a lot of people are actually going now to robot mowers, which are, you see them flying about the place, and they actually mulch it to the extent that they just leave grass behind them.
Yeah, okay. And they do it really slowly, and that's advantageous and what have you. I've run out of time. So this is the start of it now. Mm-hmm. You'll be in with us regularly?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. And I don't think it can be overestimated to get into your local garden centre. Of course, here at the Mountaintop, it's Ballacter Garden Centre, but you've got colleagues right around the county, and they're all ready to answer the questions.
Absolutely. And just love talking about plants.
Exactly. Okay, right. I might call in C's this week, actually, for a couple of boxes, pots, whatever it might be. All right, Paul, brilliant stuff.
Thank you very much.
In the house last year, she insisted on plastic, you know. But this year, I'm getting my own way.
Right,
very good. And that is just that.
You keep telling yourself
I've
that.
I've just put my foot down. End of story. Take care, Paul.
Perfect. Thank you.
Back with you tomorrow on the 9 till noon show at 9.